Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families. Committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A plan to give Florida's felons the right to vote will be on this year's ballot. The Secretary of State certified the constitutional amendment today after campaigners turned in a million petitions.
Whoever they vote for, it don't matter. Just as long as they have the opportunity to vote, and we made it. We made it to this threshold, and we got one more step to go.
Also tonight, a proposal to the Florida Constitution aims to expand rights for nursing home residents.
Part of what I'm trying to do is to change a culture that says, look, it's less expensive for us to care well for someone than to not care well for them.
In the wake of recent fatalities along the state's new high-speed rail line, we'll hear about a bill to toughen safety requirements. We'll also learn of a push to post the state motto, In God We Trust, prominently in public schools. It's day two of week three of the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. This November, Floridians will decide whether felons should get their voting rights back. After activists gathered over 1 million petitions, the constitutional amendment has qualified for the 2018 ballot, as we hear from Kate Payne.
Desmond Mead has done it. Along with the support of Florida advocates and volunteers, national heavy hitters like the ACLU, and celebrities like John Legend and Lady Gaga, a plan to restore felons' voting rights after they complete parole and probation is heading to the 2018 ballot. Mead thanks supporters in an emotional video posted to Facebook Tuesday.
No one thought we would get here, but we're here. We're one step closer. We're one step closer to liberating and giving over 1.68 million people a shot at redemption, shot at restoration.
The campaign has come a long way since it started a protest outside of the Attorney General's office in 2014.
Whoever they vote for, it don't matter. Just as long as they have the opportunity to vote, and we made it. We made it to this threshold, and we got one more step to go.
After the 2016 election, the issue took on a new significance. High-profile national outlets picked it up. The New York Times editorial board wrote an op-ed. That's because this change could have national implications. If Floridians approve the plan, an estimated 1.6 million people in the nation's largest swing state would be in line to get their rights back.
Again, that's kind of a bigger question right now in terms of what is the impact going to be.
Daniel Smith is a political scientist at the University of Florida. He says even if a fraction of felons were able to vote, they could make a difference.
If we have elections in this state that are being decided by 100,000 votes, I certainly think that 1 in 16 is a viable number in terms of those who are eligible to have their rights restored, actually getting registered to vote and turning out.
But Mirna Perez with the Brennan Center for Justice says the campaign isn't about political gain. It's a moral issue. The center, which is based at the New York University Law School, has published reports on the issue and donated tens of thousands of dollars to the campaign.
For me, the issue is not election outcomes. We are a nonprofit organization that focuses on voters and voting rights.
Like the rights of Neil Vols. He's a spokesperson with Floridians for a Fair Democracy, the organization behind the campaign. But he's also a felon hoping to vote again.
2010-11, I submitted some paperwork to get my rights restored. And the process was very cumbersome. And, the system's just broken.
Vols ultimately gave up on the current process and started trying to change it.
I got frustrated and realized that I wasn't alone, that there were people, Floridians from all over the state, who were impacted by these policies.
Currently, Florida has some of the strictest laws in the nation. Once they serve their time, felons must wait between 5 to 7 years before they can even apply for restoration. Then, one by one, they have to ask the governor and his cabinet for their rights back. Perez at the Brennan Center says Florida should get in step with the rest of the country.
You have Maine and Vermont, which allow people to vote while they're in prison, but you have other states on the other extreme, which do not give you your right to vote back unless the government specifically pardons you. Florida is among those outliers, and no other state disenfranchises the number of people that Florida does.
It'll be up to Floridians to decide during this year's midterm elections. 60% of voters will have to approve the plan in order for it to pass. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
And while we're focused on the matter of making changes to the state's fundamental document of governance, the Florida Constitution Revision Commission convenes every 20 years to review proposals to the state constitution. This go-around, the commission began with nearly 900 proposals, which have been filed this year. A proposed Bill of Rights for nursing home residents has proven contentious, as we hear from Sarah Hetherington.
Proposal 88 would introduce a nursing home bill of rights to the state constitution, including the right to a safe, comfortable environment for nursing home residents. Steve Wattrell is an attorney and board member with the Florida Justice Association. He explains the proposal is a reaction to Hurricane Irma.
We've had these folks die horrific deaths, basically cooked to death in Hollywood, Florida.
Over a dozen nursing home residents died in the wake of that disaster. Wattrell says it makes sense in a state as prone to natural disasters as Florida to ensure residents a safe environment. But Brecht Hutchin, who filed the proposal, sees even more fundamental issues that need to be addressed. Hutchin is a CRC commissioner. When he crafted the proposal, he included the right for residents to access courts and a jury system.
You and I have rights and access to court that residents of nursing homes and assisted living facilities don't have.
Hutchins says residents can lose this right when they're admitted to nursing homes.
When you're trying to find a nursing home bed, you're handed a stack of documents that's 50, 70, 80, 100 pages long, and buried in those documents are these arbitration clauses.
Arbitration is a method of dispute resolution in which two parties select a neutral decision maker. In an arbitration agreement, a party agrees to waive the right to sue and to a trial by jury. The American Bar Association recommends prohibiting pre-dispute agreements, which are made before an issue even arises. The Florida Healthcare Association asserts that arbitration agreements made between nursing homes and residents are voluntary and not a requirement of admission. But Wattrell says that's not always the case. He references his career as a personal injury lawyer.
And people feel a lot of pressure to sign it. Everybody that I deal with this has said, well, either I didn't know about it because they just gave me the signature page, or I didn't know what to do because my mom was there and she needed care, and they promised me they would give good care, and they didn't.
The FHCA argues that arbitration agreements are more expedient, cost-effective, and informal than court action. Bob Estalas is the chief lobbyist for the FHCA. He argues that the proposal would do away with that out-of-court option and encourage predatory law practices instead.
Our problem is those law firms that put the signs up across the street from our nursing homes, that run the advertisements in the newspaper, that troll for clients.
Hutchin finds that logic ridiculous.
It's a known fact that lawsuits go down. When there's people being cared for better and less harm done to them, well, on what grounds would a lawyer have to sue?
He says his ultimate goal is to protect residents.
Part of what I'm trying to do is to change a culture that says, look, it's less expensive for us to care well for someone than to not care well for them.
Proposal 88 passed its first committee vote last week. The CRC will hold public hearings between now and May, where the public can weigh in with their thoughts on this and other proposals. If Proposal 88 passes the commission's final vote, you'll see it on the ballot in November. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Hetherington.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a bill that would impose stricter regulations on high-speed rail is picking up steam in the Florida Senate.
I'm here today because I am extremely concerned that adequate safety measures will not be implemented unless we force them to be set, to be done.
Should schools be required to display the national and state motto, "In God We Trust"?
The significance of this bill is, why isn't our state and national motto being displayed? Something so great should not be hidden. It should be conspicuously displayed.
Small-scale brewers worry a bill moving in the Florida legislature could hurt their bottom line.
It's the difference in us hiring, you know, maybe another server, another part-time position at the brewery.
And if you're interested in persuading your lawmakers how to vote on a number of sustainable energy and environmental matters, your designated day is the last day in January at the Capitol.
The people who come up leave both with the networking opportunities as well as the additional knowledge of environmental issues and energy issues.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
In the wake of recent fatal railroad accidents, Florida lawmakers are looking to impose stricter regulations on high-speed rail. Sean Mulcahy reports the bill is moving through the Senate.
Melissa Lavelle was struck and killed on January 12th after apparently trying to beat an oncoming Brightline high-speed train in Boynton Beach, according to police. Less than 6 days later, Jeffrey D. King was struck and killed 5 blocks from where Lavelle died. Police said King was also doing the same thing. The newly completed Brightline high-speed rail is managed by All Aboard Florida and runs from West Palm Beach to Fort Lauderdale, with planned expansion stretching from Orlando to Miami. Following these fatalities, U.S. lawmakers are calling for investigations, and Republican State Senator Debbie Mayfield of Vero Beach is proposing stricter regulation of high-speed trains. Under Mayfield's bill, the improvements will all be paid for by the rail service.
I have filed Senate Bill 572 in an effort to get high-speed rail safety measures in place to protect the residents of our community across the state and to make sure the cost of these safety measures and upgrades are not shifted to the taxpayers.
Mayfield says this is not an attack on All Aboard Florida. She says lawmakers are open to working with the organization to find mutual solutions that will keep Floridians safe.
We embrace the high-speed train, the passenger rail. We embrace it. We just want it done the right way.
Over in the House, Vero Beach Republican Representative Aaron Grawl is carrying a similar bill. Her proposal would define the scope of oversight by state and federal departments and shield taxpayer money from being used for railroad upgrades.
Due to the tragic deaths in South Florida, it is clear that we must be diligent in our efforts to define the scope of oversight by the Florida Department of Transportation versus the Florida Rail Administration. There can be no pointing fingers any longer. We cannot stand idly by while perceived ambiguity around federal law results in greater loss of life.
House Speaker Richard Corcoran says Grawl's measure will have movement this session, but he adds legislators must also consider the private business rights of companies like All Aboard Florida. Critics of the bill say it could have a negative impact on private business and could end up costing the state. Speaking before the Senate Transportation Committee last November, All Aboard Florida's Rusty Roberts argued the state shouldn't interfere with the private sector.
Why is the legislature being asked to prevent a private company from reinvesting in its property, from creating a safer transportation corridor, from investing billions of dollars in the state, and from creating thousands of jobs? It is really simply this. It's not just about safety, but it's about 3 counties along the East Coast who do not want any increase in railroad traffic through their county.
If passed, this bill would require high-speed rail providers to finance massive upgrades to the rail systems. This includes smoothing out bumps, installing technology that remotely monitors tracks, and building additional fencing along intersections. The Florida Department of Transportation would also conduct an audit of current protocol and might suggest additional regulations. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy in Tallahassee.
Would prominently posting the official Florida State motto, "In God We Trust," improve classroom behavior and school performance? Some members of the state legislature insist it would, and their bill to require that motto to be visible in public schools is now moving ahead at the Capitol. Sasha Cordner reports.
Jacksonville Democratic Representative Kim Daniels is the bill's House sponsor.
House Bill 839 requires each district school board to adopt rules that require all schools and all buildings used by the school to display in a conspicuous place the state motto, "In God We Trust."
"In God We Trust" can mainly be seen on money and even specialty license plates. So Daniel says, given its historical significance, why not schools?
In 1864, "In God We Trust" first appeared on a 2-cent piece. In 1957, a law was passed by joint resolution to declare that "In God We Trust" be placed on paper currency. This motto is inscribed on the walls of this great capital and inked in our currency, and it should be displayed so that our children will be exposed and educated on this great motto, which is a part of this country's foundation.
But Sue Waltonsky with parent group Common Ground opposes the bill. She calls it, quote, redundant and unnecessary.
Currently, state statute requires that the state flag be displayed in a suitable place in an appropriate manner on the grounds of every elementary and secondary public school, and that the school boards furnish those flags when necessary. So what that means is that current statute satisfies the requirement to display our state motto, which is, of course, on our state flag. Common Ground is opposed to bills that fail to address real issues in education and waste taxpayer and dollars and time.
Still, that did not deter a bipartisan group of lawmakers from supporting the bill. Like Daniels, Destin Republican Representative Mel Ponder is sponsoring the House bill as well.
Time and time again, I think we too, as a culture, as a nation, even other nations as well, from one generation to the next, will forget the testimony, will forget the heritage, will forget the DNA of what the prior generation brought to the table. For supporting something like this, it is already our state motto, but also is a bedrock that we as a state and we as a nation have developed and become upon. And I think how great of us to put honor where honor is due and celebrate a bedrock of our nation of "In God We Trust," so that when the kids, if they ask, if it's in their school system, we have a testimony to share of what it means to us as a state and us as a nation.
And for Pierce, Democratic Representative Larry Lee agrees.
We look at what's happening with a lot of our young people today. We're taking God out of everything. This country was built on God. And when you look around right now, just go into your communities right now and see how many young people are even attending church anymore. Many of them don't even value or respect life anymore. So I think this is a great move.
According to the bill's staff analysis, district school boards will have to pay for the cost of putting the motto on the wall. Daniel says she doesn't see it as a significant cost. And while her measure has passed its first House committee, its Senate companion bill has not yet had a hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
You may have heard beer goggles make people more likely to pick someone up at a bar that they might otherwise pass on. Well, as it turns out, beer glasses make restaurateurs more likely to pick up a beer brand. That's according to Florida craft brewers and distributors. Regan McCarthy has more.
Under current law, restaurants and bars cannot accept gifts, including branded glassware, from beer brewers. Orange Park Republican Senator Rob Bradley says that doesn't make sense, and he has a bill to change that.
This bill is simple. It's just about Florida restaurants and bars having the ability to accept at no cost branded glassware.
But Eric Criss, the president of the Beer Industry of Florida, says it's actually a lot more complicated than that. Criss represents beer distributors.
Beer distributor is a non-descriptive term for what we do. We are the primary sales force for all of these small craft breweries. They don't have, for the most part, salespeople, and if they do, they have one or two. And it's our job to go into a Mexican restaurant or a craft beer bar or a sports pub or a big national chain and help that chain determine how to maximize its sales and its mix of beer taps. And we would very much like to do that without the influence of free stuff.
Chris says he worries the influence of free stuff will begin to take hold on the market. And Josh Abushan, who represents the Florida Brewers Guild, agrees.
I think we would find ourselves in a position where it becomes more the norm to provide glassware. And so what we would see is our members getting hit up by the distributors. We'd love to take your beer and go deliver it, but we're going to need 100 cases of glassware before we go give this out. On the flip side, from the vendors, we would love to buy it from the distributor, but you know what? You throw in 50 cases of glassware across the different vendor locations we have, and we'd be glad to take your beer up.
Bradley's bill would let restaurants and bars accept 10 cases of glasses per year per brand. Some, in opposition to the bill, have pointed out there's not much of a safeguard to ensure that number isn't surpassed. But even if the rule is followed, Ryan Lapete, who operates Deep in Tallahassee, says 10 cases of glasses would have a significant impact on his brewery's bottom line.
So for us to incur that cost now as an advertising expense or it's the difference in us hiring, maybe another server, another part-time position at the brewery.
Lapete says as it's written now, he can sell branded glassware to restaurants or bars at cost. And he says that practice makes sense. But Bradley says he's disappointed by the arguments he's hearing from brewers and distributors. He says just 2 years ago, he and other lawmakers fought for craft brewers.
To free the growler and provide them protections, legal protections, as they were under assault. And at the time, my understanding of their view of the world was they wanted the ability to free up the marketplace to compete. And now it's disappointing to see them seeking the protection of the government today.
Meanwhile, a number of organizations representing restaurants and bars are in support of the measure. The bill has two committee stops left before reaching the Senate floor. A House version is awaiting its first committee hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Now from our sister operation, the Florida Channel, here's Bob Brooks with a look at other pieces of legislation that were on the move today.
Among the bills passing through Senate and House committees today, House Bill 1231. This is entitled the Sales Tax Refund for Eligible Job Training Organizations. This bill allows a nonprofit organization to receive a 10% refund on sales taxes paid when customers purchase donated items sold by the organization. The refund is capped at $2 million, and the money must be used for job training. It passed the House Careers and Competition Subcommittee and has two more committee stops before heading to the floor. The Perinatal Mental Health Bill, or the Florida Families First Act, requires the Florida Department of Health to create public service announcements on perinatal mental health care and requires that postpartum and follow-up care provided by birth centers includes mental health screening and information on postpartum depression. House Bill 937 passed the Health Innovation Subcommittee and has two more committee stops. House Bill 303, entitled Alternative Treatment Programs for Veterans. This bill creates a pilot program requiring the Department of Veterans Affairs to provide alternative treatments for veterans with PTSD or traumatic brain injuries, and it requires treatments to have a positive effect on PTSD or TBI patients as verified by at least one scientific study. After being passed by the Health Innovation Subcommittee, it has two more committee stops. And Senate Bill 1130 recreates the Land Acquisition Trust Fund within the Department of State and repeals the scheduled termination of the trust fund. It passed the Appropriations Subcommittee on Transportation and has one more committee stop. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, During any legislative session, the state capitol is certainly full of lawmakers and legislative staffers. And if you stop by the capitol's fourth floor, you'll likely see a number of professional lobbyists all vying to persuade legislators to support their causes. And just about every day, there will be any number of other issue advocates focused on everything from expanding gun rights to making sure more low-income kids have access to health care. And when it comes to the environment and pushing sustainable energy, there are several groups around. One is called Rethink Energy Florida. Its communications director, Brian Lee, is keeping an eye on one bill by State Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez, a Miami Democrat, that would allow neighborhoods to set up solar energy co-ops.
If you have solar panels on your house and you're getting excess energy out of them, right now you can't really sell that excess energy to your neighbor if you want to, and this bill would allow that sort of third-party sale.
And there's one other piece of solar-related legislation Lee would like to see passed into law.
The Florida Smart City Challenge Grant Program. That would give cities incentives for doing various renewable energy measures.
Lee says there's also a bill that would ban the fossil fuel recovery process known as fracking anywhere within Florida's borders. In the legislature, as just about everywhere else, timing is everything. Lee thinks the memory of last year's storms, which left lots of Floridians powerless for extended periods, might help move the neighborhood solar co-op bill in particular.
We're going to be seeing more of these power outages. We're going to be seeing more people needing emergency decentralized electricity.
The more people who express support for a bill, the more likely lawmakers become to vote for it. At least that's the conventional wisdom. And that's why there are so many special days on the Capitol calendar, from University of Florida Day to Tourism Day and other events raising the awareness of one thing or the other. Rethink Energy Florida Executive Director Kim Ross says their organization's day is January 31st.
So we'll have some displays and exhibits. We'll definitely be doing a lot of education. We actually have a lunch and learn that where we break out and we do additional education beyond the topics of the day. You know, there's a lot of issues that the legislature isn't covering either because it's not their purview. For instance, it's at the federal level, or because they just aren't covering it. And in those cases, we're doing further education so that the people who come up leave both with the networking opportunities as well as the additional knowledge of environmental issues and energy issues.
Just one more reason to stop by the Capitol if you happen to be in Tallahassee the last day of the month. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank Sarah Hetherington, Sean Mulcahy, our sister operation, the Florida Channel, and contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families. Committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.